when everything looks like doom and gloom, there is always hope to turn to. In hope's eyes, we tend to wish for and anticipate all the good that life can offer. It almost is like to have life pictured through colored, rose-colored glasses in looking into the future. We want to be in a situation in the future completely opposite to the situation we are and find ourselves in right now. In many respects, the utopia we hope and long for is just a dream. A dream which can never be fully realized. Now, for you sports fans, for the Baltimore baseball fan, this may be a reality for some time to come. It's not right in the immediate future. But hope springs eternal as the Ravens fans now are beginning to realize the fulfillment of hope. In truth, hope of a better day or time, in many instances, is all that we have to cling to. This is the case with many who may be suffering from lingering illness. When we may find ourselves maybe unexpectedly alone. And this is especially dear to those who have lost loved ones this past year during this and to face this season alone. We hope and dream. And when life is undermined in one way or another, we cling to hope. In many ways, we find ourselves as a nation and in the middle of one crisis after another, which may lead us to hope. Hope that things will change and people will not have to live in fear and turmoil. Every time there is a mass killing, we are reminded of this. And we hope that something will change. Now, the ancient Hebrews, who were conquered and held captive by the Babylonians, were a people who had lost hope. They were separated from their beloved homeland and living a life far below their accustomed lifestyle. They were captives in a foreign land, suffering daily at the hands of their captors, with little to give them hope for anything better in the future. Their future seemed bleak and hopeless. It was to this circumstance that the prophet Isaiah gave words of hope. He describes what the Hebrews needed to envision. He gave them the vision of a new life, a new world to which they eventually would enter. He writes, "The wilderness and the dry land shall be glad, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing." Isaiah, the prophet of hope, led the chosen people of God to believe that they again would be a people and a nation of respect. For it would be seen as a nation glorifying God. Again states, the glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, the majesty of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord, the majesty of our God. The nation in which the Hebrews long for and to be a part of. Isaiah went on with words of encouragement, which these defeated people needed to hear. They were given to each other to encourage each other. Strengthen the weak hand. Make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are fearful of heart, be strong, do not fear, here is your God. You will come with vengeance, with terrible recompense. He will come and save you. These are the words of hope. Hope and comfort for the chosen people of God. For they thought they had been rejected by their God. And this new hope needed to be reinforced in the hearts of the people. Furthermore, the prophet Isaiah gave hope in ways which directly affected people's individual circumstances and sufferings. He states, then the eyes of the blind shall be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like a deer and the tongue of the speechless sing for joy. You know, it's interesting that Isaiah related hope in his prophecy not only to a nation, but to each individual. Each individual who were suffering personal afflictions. This is what we have to take to heart. This will all happen, for there will be a way for this newfound hope to happen. It was, quote, a highway shall be there, and it shall be called the Holy Way. The unclean shall not travel on it, but it shall be for God's people. No traveler, not even fools, shall go astray. The end result of this hope-giving prophecy was, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with singing. Everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness. Sorrow and sighing shall flee away. Must have been music to the ears of those despised people at that point. The words of Isaiah were not only vital in keeping hope alive within the captive Hebrews of his day, but would be relevant to the Hebrews through the time of Jesus. They were words of hope which would have been known by the people of Jesus' time. This would have been especially true with John the Baptist. Now, up until John's imprisonment and the account in our gospel lesson this morning, it seems that John wasn't convinced totally that Jesus was that appointed Messiah. Of course, when he baptized Jesus, he knew that Jesus was a special messenger of God. and perhaps a prophet. That is why he had to know the truth about this man he baptized. So from prison, he sent a message by one of his disciples to Jesus. Are you the one? Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another? It is interesting to note that even after the baptismal experience, John was still not convinced. Remember these words. And when Jesus had been baptized, just as he came out of the water, suddenly the heavens were opened to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased." Now, John's doubting and thinking was not so unusual, because John most likely knew Jesus as he was growing up and being somewhat of a normal boy. Now, how many friends that you grew up with, you could say, well, maybe. How many of these friends, you know, you say, could they have been a president of a corporation? Now, how can he be then? How can it be the anointed one who the Hebrews longed for? Jesus' response to John was almost word for word in response to Isaiah's prophecy. Listen, go tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight. The lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have the good news brought to them. And blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me. With this response, John would immediately know who Jesus was, for he knew of Isaiah's prophecy. John also would know that he too was that important messenger sent by God to introduce the long-awaited Messiah. See, I am sending my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you. So it's a revelation to John all the way around. In this, our day of turmoil and anxiety, we long for that time in which truth prevails and is not clouded by greed and ambition and even hate. We long to find that road of which Isaiah speaks. A highway shall be there, and it shall be called the Holy Way. We long for its destination of a world which elevates love and well-being for all beyond the self-centered egos which destroy and separate us. This is why we light the third Advent candle, the candle of love. It is through love that we can begin to realize the importance of God's love as celebrated at Christmas. It is the renewed commitment of this love which will not only make a difference in our celebration of the Nativity, but to our lives and the lives of others throughout every day. For then we live a life of hope. This is when the Christmas message of the angel will take on a renewed meaning in our troubled times. The message of good news, the message of hope, the message of God's love, and the message that we are to share and live that love with others. This is what it's about. Amen.